Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Joey Schultz and I'm joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, the guy who loves to cast Colossification onto one of his creatures to make it huge, that's Matt Morgan.
So my girlfriend asked me to stop singing Wonderwall to her and I said maybe.
Is that a lyric joke,
That is
Matt?
The lyrics.
It's been a long time since I've heard that song.
Joey, so you are not going to be the one that saves me.
I'm having a full-on internet embarrassment moment because all of the listeners are totally going to know this song.
That
and I don't
song
know
is
the
older
lyrics
than
and...
you. I will forgive you this time.
Oh, man. Next up, the guy who likes to use Colossification to tap an enemy creature so that he can swing in for lethal. That's Dana Roach.
So we're 2 weeks in right now of companions just wrecking every other format. And I think given the progression from Teferi to Veil of Summer to Once Upon a Time to Oko to Underworld Breach, now to Companions, core set this summer is going to have a card that literally just punches your opponent in the face. Like that's the only place to go from here is you drop it and it physically assaults your opponent.
Well, I think the core set's going to be a Teferi-themed set, so it might just rewind the game in case you would lose or something like that. Absolutely. Anyway, this is the EDH Retcast. EDH Rec is the best deck-building resource on the web for the Commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And what we'd like to do here on the podcast is give all that data a little more context. Hey, Dana, what are we talking about this week?
We are going to talk about the pre-con upgrade feature on EDH Rec.
Indeed, those new pre-cons are out. We've got those deck lists out in the world, and people are already making some changes to them. And there is a feature on EDH Rec that measures those changes, and we want to take a look and see what people are doing to upgrade those, see what we think about the changes that are being made to those pre-con deck lists to make them even better if we've got any other things to offer, any other ideas for them. But before we get to that, we have to give a huge thank you to Josh Lee Kwai and the team at the Command Zone who handle all the post-production work on the podcast, making it look super spiffy. They do such a great job. Thank you guys so much. And also, thank you to our sponsors, Card Kingdom and TCG Player, who provide the up-to-date price information for the card images on EDH Rec. If you want to make any of the upgrades that we're going to be talking about in this episode, we just can't recommend the services of Card Kingdom and TCG Player enough. All you have to do is click on those price tags on EDH Rec to go right to their storefronts. And also, if you use cardkingdom.com, you can go to cardkingdom.com/EDH Rec to let them know that we sent you. So, guys, pre-con upgrade guide. What is this? Where can you find it on the site? How can people access this feature on EDH Rec to help upgrade those precons?
So the precon upgrade is actually a pretty easy tool to utilize. All you have to do is just go to edhrec.com, kind of a no-brainer there, I know, but go to the sets tab up at the top and you can click that and it'll take you down to the most recent sets that we have. And at the bottom of that, it's going to say precon upgrades. All you do is got to click that and it'll take you to every single precon that we've had so far and has everything listed out. You can click on a shortcut to go to a specific year, but you can just click on any given deck. So say we want to look at Kalamax decks and what people are doing to upgrade that precon after they get it and take it out of the box. So you go to the sets, go to precon upgrades, and it'll take you to that. And at the very top, obviously, Commander 2020, we just had, and just click on Kalamax right there and it will take you to all the different cards people are adding, all the different cards people are taking out. It'll even help you create a good land base for that deck and just how to upgrade Arcane Maelstrom into a better functioning deck than it is right out of the box.
Yeah, you can do that for any of those face commanders that are showing up there. And actually, if you're on the main EDH Rec page for any of those commanders, there is a small section down beneath their image that allows you to just hit the precon upgrades page right from their actual EDH Rec page if you want to see some of those changes. So you can use just the precon thing through sets. It's just edhrec.com/precon, or you can use just on the commanders page. And so what we're going to do is just take a look through some of these. What changes are people making? Do we agree? Are there any other changes that we would like to make? Let's start off with that Kalamax deck. What are some of the cards that we're seeing people remove and what do we think of them?
The first one they're adding here is Primal Amulet, which is the Ixalan flip artifact that turns into a land and it makes instant sorcery spells you cast cost one less, which is just useful in the deck in general. And whenever you cast an instant sorcery spell, you put a charge counter on it. And if there are four or more charge counter on it, you flip it into Primal Wellspring, which is a land that you can tap to add a mana of any color to your mana pool. And when you use that mana to cast an instant sorcery spell, you copy that spell. So it kind of goes along with what Kalamax is doing. It's just a really good card in general and has a lot of synergy with that deck.
Oh, yeah. That's not even the only copy thing that I'm seeing on this page. We've got Expansion Explosion, Narset's Reversal, Increasing Vengeance, Reverberate a little further down the page, Twin Cast. And I feel like this is a point that we should bring up some of those copy spells because there's an interaction with Kalamax that we missed on our review episode where if Kalamax is tapped and someone else casts a spell and you haven't cast a spell yet, and then you cast one of those copy spells, you can use your copy spell to copy someone else's card, and then the copy that Kalamax makes of your copy spell can target your original copy spell, which then is weird, and this is why I don't play Teemer very much, because there's math involved here, or is there? Anyway, you can repeatedly copy your own stuff to make Kalamax infinitely big, getting a bunch of plus one counters on that, an interaction that we totally missed, but that definitely makes Kalamax really, really deadly, so it is really no wonder that we're seeing so many copy effects, in addition to the fact that those are just really good cards in the first place with his ability, right?
Well, in the copy effect then doesn't, it's not like that's of course very, very, very effective, but it doesn't then do nothing. You just then use the last copy to do what you wanted to do anyway, if you wanted to actually copy right. A spell. So yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, super, super cool. Other really great instance, Dig Through Time, Mystic Confluence. I'm seeing 18% of people at the time of our recording right now are adding in Nexus of Fate, the extra turn spell. So I'm just like, uh-oh, that's a little dangerous one to copy with Kalamax.
Seems pretty good.
Are there any cards that you see here that are being added to the deck that you don't necessarily agree with, though, that you think maybe people should hold off from adding to the deck?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of Turnabout outside of combo decks. So seeing that in there, especially if you don't want to be untapping Kalamax, because then you're going to lose the ability to copy all these different spells that you're trying to cast. Same with Seedborn Muse, where it untaps all your permanents. So if you want to be doing anything like copying all of your spells on other people's turns, Seedborn Muse is not going to be a way to do that. So both of those seem to kind of go against what Kalamax is trying to do. You want Kalamax tapped a lot of times. I see people playing stuff like Springleaf Drum as a way to just tap Kalamax without having to attack, and then you get all your copy triggers. Seedborn Muse and Turnabout don't do that, and currently they're both getting added to about 20% of decks, and I'm not a big fan of those additions.
Well, I would say at least in the case of Turnabout, I mean, you just probably would pick lands with it to generate the extra mana and then tap them all and pick lands with the second copy to do it all again. So Turnabout, even if it only reads untap all lands target player controls, it's still probably pretty good in that deck. You just would never use the creature portion of it.
Sure.
This is a really tricky deck. Like, this feature works great if we're talking about something that's a really specific theme or even a tribe. Like the Edgar Markov deck is going to definitely give you some good vampire suggestions and cards in your deck with vampires, or the Kadena deck we had last year is going to, show some morphs that you might have forgot, or things that do cool stuff with morphs. This is a much more open-ended deck, and what you're going to be doing with your Kalamax deck might not necessarily match what somebody else is doing. So, like, while there are probably some obvious cards that anyone building Edgar Markov might not want to run Edgar Markov, I think it's much trickier in this Kalamax deck to point at things that people are adding or taking out and argue against them, maybe, because I don't know. The strategy isn't so nearly well-defined about what you're going to be doing with this deck.
Right. You could do some of those infinite shenanigans that we just mentioned, or it could be some other bit more combat-focused, since that was a very efficient way of getting Kalamax to be tapped, or maybe you're being more tricky with tappy, untappy shenanigans. That's very open-ended. When you said, though, about stuff that is maybe a little bit difficult about cards to remove in the Kalamax deck, though, I'm going to push back a little bit against that, because when we move down to the cards that are being cut from the Kalamax deck, we're seeing a whole lot of stuff being cut at a very high rate. Basically, all of the... Okay, not all, but a whole lot of the original cards from the deck are being taken out of this list, from the Aeon Frolicker Otter to Nascent Metamorph to all of the Impetuses, Primal Empathy, Haldan and Paco are being removed, which really, how dare you? It's such a good boy. Strength of the Tajaru is also being removed, which I don't think that is an original one, but it is also like, wait, why is that here? There's a lot of cards that are being removed from here that I don't think really jive very well with the deck. So it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm seeing a lot of cards that are being cut from this list that I am super here that these need to be taken away to make any improvements to that list. Are there any here, though, that you guys might keep in the deck that you see that people are removing that maybe you would actually recommend that they hold on to from that precon?
I'm definitely on board with, as the list shows, dropping a ton of the creatures and things like auras. That's absolutely not what the deck wants to be doing in any format. You know, I do kind of like Evolution Charm as a card. It is instant speed too, so you can regularly copy it. And it's also one of those cards. The problem with a copy spell deck like Calamax was also the problem kind of with Raikou, where you want to get greedy and run your spells in a way that you know you're going to copy them with Raikou or with Calamax. But you also don't want to have a deck full of cards that you have no intention of casting until your commander's in play, too. Evolution Charm is one that you can still probably cast and not feel terrible about it on turn two. But it's also still fairly useful if you cast it once your commander's out and tapped as well. So,
yeah, I really like Evolution Charm. I think that's one card I personally had an eye out as. Why are people cutting this? Because it's, if anything, you can use it as a kind of a regrowth type of effect. You can make sure that Calamax doesn't get chump blocked and die. You give him flying at instant speed. The fact that it's a modal spell, I like modal spells when you're able to copy it and then choose different modes. So
I don't think that's how it works, actually.
Oh, you can't, you can't change modes? Well,
I'm pretty sure you have to use the same mode. <I'm out.
laughs> Matt's off the show.
I'm gone. No, I still like Evolution Charm. I think charms and just any modal spells in general are a little underrated. So I would keep Evolution Charm around for the reasons that Dana pointed out too.
And hey, maybe even add in more charms if that's the kind of flexibility that you're looking for to make it a very tricky deck. Which brings me to my other question. We've looked through a couple of cards that people are adding, a couple of cards that people are cutting. Are there any cards that you would remove from the precon that don't seem to be showing up on this cards to cut page? Or any cards that you would want to add to it that people don't seem to be adding just yet? What are some other things that you would want to sort of prune or spruce up this deck list to make the precon even stronger?
When I was looking at building a Calamax deck once upon a time, in the far, far distant, 5 days ago, I've been pondering doing it with like kind of combat damage tricks. I like the idea of turning, a buff that gives a creature +5/+5 into a +10/+10 and sneaking through damage, or things that double damage, being able to like double that effect up as well. So, if you are not going to be going the, copy an extra turn effect route or the go infinite on Calamax's body route, like we had talked about, I think there's some really useful cards there that, I had even mentioned on a show in the past, things like Overblaze that doubles the damage a permanent would deal. So I like the idea of some of those kind of combat tricks in this deck.
Yeah, I'm super here for that kind of thing. The Rush of Blood, Overblaze. Yeah. Might of Nephilim is another kind of interesting one. It's a 2-mana instant that gives something +2 for each of its colors. So you would get, that's a 2-mana +12 for Calamax on top of the fact, because he copies it and then you get a +1 counter on it. So it's actually a +13. So like that's like a lot of damage out of nowhere. Those are pretty cool. I am seeing very few cards that allow you to tap Calamax outside of combat. Like there is a Smuggler's Copter at the time that we're recording this. There's a Smuggler's Copter that's showing up in 18% of decks. It's being added to from those. But I feel like there should be more, maybe vehicles or Springleaf Drum effects or something like that. If combat isn't the way that you're going to end up going with this, having a few other options like that. And I tell you what, another one that I would really love to see here is Force of Vigor to destroy potentially 4 artifacts or enchantments. Sounds really, really devastating. Like that sounds really, really good. And I would love to see more Force of Vigor. I think that's a bit more pricey though. But mostly like ways to help manipulate whether Calamax is tapped is something I'd also be here for. And actually, since I can never stop talking. The Price of Progress is an instant. That deals damage to each opponent for each of actually probably each player, but for each of their non-basics. And that's like that can be really, really powerful if people are playing a lot of non-basics and copying that. Like, ooh, that can be a total game winner, especially if you're playing a lot of stuff that fetches you a lot of basics because you're playing green. Like that could be totally a swingy thing out of nowhere too that I'd really like to see.
Yeah, I think any of the burning or the scaling burn effects, I should say, like Price of Progress seem very, very powerful. Since you guys talked about cards that you want to add, I think some cards that people are keeping around that I maybe am not so sure about, stuff like Goblin Dark Dwellers. I'm not a big fan of 5-mana to recast something for 3 or less. I don't think that's a very good rate for Commander. I think at 5-mana, there's probably quite a bit of things you could be doing at 5-mana that are going to be better worth it and fit in better with Calamax as a commander. So that's probably one of the biggest cuts that I would say people are keeping a little too often in these decks so far.
Right. I'm also kind of surprised we're not seeing more rituals here. Something like Seething Song, that goes from 3-mana generating you 5 to 3-mana generating you 10-mana. I mean, you're just going to then cast all the spells that turn, too. I think those kind of boosts maybe don't feel great in a game where you're not copying them. But this kind of deck where you're going to be running you know, definitely a copy effect off your commander, but probably more than that, the ability to just generate all the mana in the world off that feels really, really good. And I'm surprised there aren't a few more of those showing up in this list.
I think if you're going to do that, you'd want to combine that with some X spells. So if you do want to do the ritual route,
sure,
make sure you're playing some more Comet Storms or anything, instant speed X spells, especially mm-hmm. because if you're doing it in combat with Kalamax, you need to be making sure you can take advantage of all that mana.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on next to another precon here. We're going to move from the Teemer Incense deck to the Jeskai Cycling, looking at the Timeless Wisdom precon. What are some of the changes that we are seeing here, guys?
So for the Cycling deck with Gavi Nest Warden, where you can pay zero rather than cycle, or then pay the cycling cost, I should say, the first cycling spell you cast or cycle every turn. There's so many cyclings on this card.
There's so many cyclings.
So many cyclings.
Yeah.
But when you draw your second card each turn, you also get to create a 2/2 red and white dinosaur cat token every turn as well. So what we're seeing a lot of people do, obviously Astral Slide is one of the most well-known cycling cards and cycling payoff cards, especially that we see. Alhamrit's Archive is one that I absolutely love. That's an artifact for five, a legendary artifact for five mana. If you would gain life, you gain twice that much life instead. And if you would draw a card, except the first one you draw, each in each of your draw steps, you draw two cards instead. So if you, you know, cast a spell and you get to draw a card, you get to draw double. That's an incredibly powerful effect in this type of deck where you're cycling and you're drawing more than just one card every turn, especially on your turn. We're also seeing from the main set of Ikoria, the Unpredictable Cyclone, the possibility storm for cycling cards. So we're seeing a lot of just ways to make sure that those cycling spells that you have, whenever you do cycle them, you're getting some sort of payoff for it. And I'm a big fan of what these directions are doing.
Yeah, a really interesting one here that kind of threw me for a second. I'm like, wait, why is that here? Is Afara, God of the Polis, who lets you draw a card if a creature entered the battlefield under your control during the last turn? And then I realized, oh, because Gavi can mm-hmm. make a cat token, and then you only have to cycle one other card, and then Afara is just like, oh, I will draw you that card because of the thing from the last turn. So that becomes a really great engine. Yeah, there's a lot of really great stuff that we're seeing here. Are there any other things that, I don't know, maybe jump out that aren't so great? Any other cards here that are kind of like, wait, why is this one being added? Are there other options that maybe there are better cards than this stuff here? I'm not sure if that's really happening for me. I think I like most of the stuff that I'm seeing here that people are adding, but I'm just want to throw it to you guys and see if that's the case for you.
You know, I get the power of Niv-Mizzet Perun, but man, that casting cost is brutal in a three-color deck.
Mm.
I would be very hesitant to run it. You know, I've had problems in my three-color Kresh deck with just trip black pips on, is it Necropolis Regent?
Yeah.
I mean, just triple black has been a challenge with that card to the point where I've since taken it out of the deck. This is twice as difficult, essentially, to cast. It's a great card, but like I feel like it's going to burn you unless you are running the absolute perfect mana base.
One that is jumping out to me that is kind of like, this is a little strange, is a Flourishing Fox from the main Ikoria set. It's a 1-mana 1/1 that also has cycling, and whenever you cycle another card, you put a +1/+ counter on it. Even if you're cycling a lot of stuff, that seems like a pretty slow rate and a small place to begin. So that one does catch my eyes being like, well, I mean, that's a little weird. I'm not sure that there's that. And I think that also you kind of have to choose with this deck how you want these win conditions to work, because you can use Gavi to make a whole bunch of tokens and then maybe try and take advantage of a token win in some way. But then maybe you'd actually prefer to go with something a little different, like a Glinthorn Bucket. Like a
Glinthorn Bucket. It's a
I heard
a vessel for hauling water from place to place.
A Glinthorn Bunk. That's what my grandpa would say. It's like, that's a load of bunk.
I was hoping to redo that, but now I think we have to keep that mess up in the podcast because of your joke. Glinthorn Buccaneer is a 3-mana 2/4 Minotaur Pirate that whenever you discard a card, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. And that could also be a way that you want to do if you want to take the cycling deck and maybe really lean into how much you are cycling, doing it multiple times a turn, if that's at all possible. That can deal damage at a really, really great rate that tokens maybe wouldn't be able to meet at that rate unless you're manipulating tokens. So like, there's some diversity here, and you really have to figure out what you want your win conditions to be. Glinthorn Bucket, I'm never going to live that one down. Let's move on to the cards that are being cut from this deck, though. What are the things that we're seeing here, Matt?
So as far as things that people are cutting, the Impetuses are the first things to go, it seems like, and that's fair. They're a fun political card, but if you're looking to actually win games, I'm not sure how many those are going to help you get there. So it makes sense why those are getting cut. Agitator Ant actually is one of the highest cut cards as well. That's the 2 and a red for the 2/2 insect. And at the beginning of your end step, you can put 2 +1/+1 counters on a creature that, you know, an opponent controls, and then you goad those creatures. it makes sense. It's not really fitting in with the theme of what Gavi's trying to do. So that's probably why Agitator Ants are not getting kept in the deck. Portal Mage is another one that it's kind of weird, and it makes sense why it's not getting there, because if you look at the cards that people are adding, it's a lot of cycling cards and it's some payoffs. So anything that isn't either a payoff or an enabler in this deck, people are kind of focusing down, which I'm a big fan of. So it makes sense to kind of get rid of the cards that pull away from the focus.
Matt, I'm doing this purely because I was embarrassed. Now I need to turn the embarrassment hose on someone else. But you said it makes sense, I think, four times in the last 1 minute. So that just is something that I
you might say I was compelled to say that it made sense.
Don't make fun of me. Even when I try to make fun of other people, it doesn't work. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. I do just want to talk about some of these cuts. Galen Hornbucket. Oh, goodness. I do want to address some of the cards that I'm seeing cut here, though, because I don't think I agree with some of these. Like the ones that you just mentioned there, Matt, totally. Yeah, those are kind of strange. But Zenith Flare is actually jumping out to me as a card that I'm surprised people are cutting from this list. It's a 4-mana instant, deals X damage to any target, and you gain X life, where X is the number of cards with a cycling ability in your graveyard. So far, at the time that we're recording, it's being cut from 66% of decks. And that just kind of surprises me, because I feel like you do need to make sure that you've got some cycling payoffs. And if you can be, you know, very, very uber cycling and getting a bunch of stuff into your graveyard, this seems like a great way to just totally deal a bunch of damage. And Jeskai is really good at like copying spells or recasting those spells too, if you want. So I'm a little surprised to see that one there. Are there any other cuts that maybe you guys think are a little questionable?
I'm going to agree with your Zenith Flare that it should be sticking around. Because if you've been playing any arena lately, the companion, the red-white one, where you can...
Zirda?
Yeah, Zirda. It's all about cycling. I was hit by a Zenith Flare for 25 on arena in standard. So Zenith Flare is very, very powerful, guys. Keep it in your decks.
That's really cool. So, all right, what about stuff that isn't showing up on this page? Any cards that maybe you would actually want to cut from the deck that doesn't seem to be being cut a whole lot, or any cards that you would add to the deck that aren't showing up on this pre-con upgrade feature just yet?
You know, it's one of those things that the land base can always be, you know, fairly heavily turned upside down. I do think too many cycling lands, and especially in this deck, I think there's a tendency maybe to want to jam as many cycling lands into the deck as possible, and there's a good amount of them in this deck. But they almost always come into play tapped, and I think it's fine to have a few, but I don't know if you want half of your lands ET being tapped just in the off chance that you're going to use them to cycle later on. I think that seems risky, and I would pull some of those out for sure. Then they're not being pulled.
Or potentially knowing that going in, maybe Amulet of Vigor would be a good thing to include
in this deck.
Yeah, that could be something interesting there.
I kind of agree with the mana base. And this kind of applies for any of these.
Sure.
Myriad Landscape is a card that we've kind of questioned in three-color decks specifically. I'm not a big fan of it. People are only cutting it from 11% of decks, and I think that number probably should be a little bit higher. But as far as cards that people are not adding, find some sort of really powerful payoff. I mean, we mentioned Zenith Flare, something that people are cutting. Having a payoff beyond Astral Slide to kind of just accrue value with your Cloud Blazers that people are adding into the deck, but have some way to close the game, because one thing that we kind of noticed and we've talked about ourselves is you're going to be doing a lot. You're going to be seeing a lot of cards every game, but how are you closing the game with a Gavi deck? That's kind of our biggest concern. So make sure whatever you're adding, it's a way to actually win the game.
Yeah, a card that jumps out to me, and this one is just a common from the Ikoria set, but Dranith Stinger is a 2-mana 2/2. Whenever you cycle another card, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. So if you are leaning into it, that could actually deal a whole lot of damage. It doesn't apply to all discards, but like the Glinthorn Bucket, I think, does apply to all discards. But, you know, this is actually pretty sly. That could actually deal a whole lot of damage if you're, you know, working around that. A big thing also that I think is kind of important, we mentioned that like stuff like Astral Drift is being included in a whole lot of decks. And so maybe including some more blink targets for this deck might also be pretty good. Stuff like Mnemonic Wall, Archaeomancer, Scholar of Ages. That way you can cycle a card, blink one of those creatures, which will then return an instant sorcery back to your hand. And if that one has cycle, then you can just do it all again. And then that will get you tons of cycling payoffs to feed into your Dranith Stingers or your Glinthorn Buckets and stuff like that. So that might be something, too, to put in there. A couple of good blink targets could be a way to also maneuver a win condition, because you want to have a few of those, and Astral Drift should have a really great juicy target to blink for that. I think that those are some other cards that I would be interested in seeing here too. Alrighty, before we get to the other precons, we want to take a brief pause and challenge the stats. There's a ton of information here on EDH Rec, but we don't always agree with it. Sometimes I think that cards are seeing too much play. Sometimes I think that cards are seeing too little play. So we like to talk about those cards here. Matt, do you want to start us off this week with challenge the stats?
I sure can. So one of my favorite commanders from this new set from Ikoria is Riel the Everwise. I have been trying to figure out how I want to build the deck. Do I want to tear apart Niv-Mizzet Perrin and turn into a Riel deck? That's something I've been kind of tinkering with a little bit. I do like that it's very easy to cast, but Riel the Everwise is just one in Izzet colors for an 0/3 human wizard. Riel the Everwise, though, does get +1/+0 for each instant and sorcery in your graveyard, and then whenever you discard one or more cards for the first time each turn, discard that many cards, or draw that many cards. Excuse me. So one card on the decks that we've seen coming into EDH Rec so far that isn't on any of those decks, actually, it's not even showing up on the suggestions page for Riel, is Una's Grace, and that is 2 and a blue for an instant that says target player draws a card. But the important part here is that the card has Retrace, where you can cast this card from your graveyard by discarding a land card in addition to paying its other costs. Now, as a mana sink, as a way to make sure you're casting spells from your graveyard, you always have something going on. It's just a very, very powerful card. You're discarding a card, which basically turns into a 2-mana instant speed divination if you're discarding a land every turn. But if you're drawing a lot of cards, which you probably are doing in Izzet colors, you're going to have spare lands more often than not. I can't count the times that I've had someone or some lands just sitting around in my hand when I'm playing Niv-Mizzet. So I think Una's Grace is a nice way to make sure you're drawing a lot of cards. You can keep 3 mana up if you want to pretend that you have a counterspell, for example. Maybe you want to play Cancel and get somebody real good, Dana. Or you can just play Una's Grace, discard an extra card, and then draw 2 cards, and you're fueling up Riel. I really like it. The fact that it isn't showing up on the page, I think, is incorrect. I'm not saying it should be in every Riel deck, but it certainly should be in at least, I would say, 20%, if not a little bit more than that.
Yeah, interesting engine there. Not the kind of thing you'd usually think of. And Riel, that might be one of those win conditions to put into the Gavi deck we were just talking about too, actually. I'm going to move on to my challenge here. I'm looking at a card that we may have talked about on a previous episode, maybe back in the 40 or 50s or episode 60s or something like that. But man, it's still only showing up in 164 decks on the website, and that just seems wrong. This is Gossamer Chains, a 2-mana enchantment that says you can return Gossamer Chains to its owner's hand. That's its activation cost, that is its activated ability, and the effect that you get for this is to have target unblocked creature deal no combat damage this turn. Man, this is so cool for Enchantress decks. If you're playing something like Tuvasa the Sunlit or Daxus the Returned, this is an amazing piece of defense that you can just put out there. If someone's going to attack you, you can bounce their creature to their hand, and then you would get another enchantment activation on it. It's kind of a cool rattlesnake effect, and I don't think people are going to want to give you extra, Enchantress triggers to draw more cards or get more experience with Daxus or anything like that. This could be another great thing for Alila Artful Provocateur, who also loves to cast a bunch of enchantments. It's just a very underrated defensive enchantment that really synergizes nicely with what these decks already like to do. So I think that 164 decks is criminally low and should show up a lot more in the decks that care a lot about enchantments.
I like this even to put in a Xerta deck where it's a permanent that has an activated ability.
Oh, hey.
Lets you enable that companion clause, because usually enchantments are kind of hard to have activated abilities on. This is a good way to fill that slot.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the Xerta Companion. Interesting. Yeah, because you would be restricted from a lot of other forms of removal with the Xerta Claws if that's your companion. And this is a neat way to get some defensive. Yeah, cool observation. I like it. All right, Dana, what's yours?
Mine is Scale Up, and I'm going to mention it specifically for Edric, Spymaster of Trest decks. Scale Up is 1 green for a sorcery until end of turn. Target creature you control becomes a green worm with base power and toughness 6/4. But the key here is it has overload for 4 green-green. So all those flying men and unblockable 1/1s you have in that deck, it's just one more way to kill your opponent by overloading it for 6 mana and suddenly giving all those creatures essentially +5/+5, basically. In that deck, oftentimes you're trying to like chain extra turns and get into a position where you can win with maybe Triumph of the Hordes or something along those lines. Crater Hoofs create too, but this is just one more option in the deck. It's a very, very cheap card physically to purchase, and for the 6 mana it costs to cast, most of the time, by the time you are in a position to cast it, you just kill everybody. So it's just one more win condition in Edric decks, and it should be in way more than 600 decks total on EDH Rack.
Yeah, that kind of deck suffers a bit because an Overwhelming Stampede is the traditional thing we would expect to buff.
But the creatures are all 1/1s.
Right. Yeah. I think that actually the scale up would be a great addition too, potentially for Kadena decks, because they tend to have a lot of tiny creatures.
Sure.
The morphs that are 2/2s, you put a bunch of them out, a bunch of manifests, and they flip over and they're like a 2/1 or something like that. And one of the win condition cards that came in that precon was Biomass Mutation, which doesn't look all that great, but actually is kind of nice when you have that many tiny bodies to be able to take advantage of. And maybe scale up would be a thing that Kadena could take advantage of as well. This is an interesting one that you shouldn't sleep on cards from Modern Horizons, because oh my goodness, Modern Horizons did some stuff.
Yes,
there's
it
a lot of cool stuff hiding
that's
in that set.
Putting it very politely, Joey. Did some stuff.
All right. Let's get back into those precons. We're going to look next at the Mardu Humans deck helmed by Jarena Kudrow. Matt, what are some of the cards that we are seeing people adding to the Jarena Kudrow deck?
So the Jarena Kudrow deck is obviously getting a lot of human love. Mentor of the Meek, Judith the Scourge Diva. Those are two cards.
Please, sorry. Please never say human love. Don't Google that.
Please, definitely don't Google it. No. But there are a lot of cards that synergize very well with the human tribe within Magic the Gathering. Let's go with that. But even some non-humans like Angel of Glory's Rise, where when it enters the battlefield, you exile all zombies, but then you also get to return all human creatures from your graveyard to your battlefield. So it's a mass reanimation for all humans that might have, you know, died over the course of the game. One of Joey's favorite commanders, Sir Conrad the Grim, also getting added into a pretty significant percentage of decks. So obviously human tribal and just anything that synergizes well with humans on the battlefield.
Yeah, very much. Are there cards here that are sticking out to you that might be a little awkward, or that you think maybe, I don't know if this one needs to be added as much, or does this look like a good suite of additions to the Mardu Humans deck? What are your thoughts on some of these cards here?
I hesitate to say this because I know everyone in the world who plays white loves Mentor the Meek. It's fine. But it's much better in a deck that's producing tokens, so you have mana free to draw those cards. It gets very kind of Mind's Eye. The challenge with Mind's Eye is, you know, when you cast it, it's tough to leave that mana up to draw the extra cards. Mentor can get tricky, too, to have the mana up to draw extra cards. I get that it's a human, so there's some added synergy there, so maybe there's just no downside to running it in that case, but I'd be very cautious about relying on Mentor the Meek as a primary draw source in a deck like this. I think you are going to find you have a tough time getting a ton of value out of it.
I'm totally here with you on that one, Dana.
And maybe you don't need a ton of value. Like maybe in this kind of deck, if you draw one card off, that's good enough.
I don't think so, because I mean, this is an aggro deck, which means you need to keep your hand stocked. This is really awkward. Like the creature has to have power 2 or less. Jarena Kudrow pumps all of your stuff, and maybe you are playing her later on to be an anthem to finish out the game, but she also still makes a token when she first enters that you'd probably want to take advantage of that. Like it's just very awkward timing, and this is in a deck that contains black, which has access to some really wonderful card draw effects. So the weird sequencing of Mentor the Meek, there's no downside, I guess, because it is a human, but this isn't the primary source of card advantage, because this we've got access to a color that can draw tons of cards in really amazing ways. This one is a fine addition, but it shouldn't be like
keep your expectations in check.
And
one thing too, one of the other cards that people are putting in at a pretty significant percentage of decks is Outlaw's Merriment, where basically you have a 2/3 chance of getting a token that makes Mentor the Meek trigger. Sometimes you might be making a 3/1 human warrior instead of a 2/1 or a 1/2 token, which means that, you know, a third of the time it's not going to trigger Mentor the Meek. So if you're counting on those two synergizing well, I think you can do much, much better than that exact synergy right there.
Or some other cards that people are adding on this page, Door of Destinies, Vanquisher's Banner. There's a not insubstantial number of anthems on this page that would contradict the mission of the Mentor of the Meek.
Right.
So that's just a little bit awkward there. So I think the black draw spells are just going to be so much better, serve you a whole lot better. This is a human, again, so like, again, it does get you stuff.
Yeah.
But if you are looking for sources of card advantage, then you know, making sure that Mentor of the Meek isn't the only one is a thing there. And I guess I kind of want to harp on this a little bit, because when we start looking at the cards that are being cut from this precon, we actually see on this page that cards like Ambition's Cost are being cut from 30% of the decks that we're measuring far.
No. Do not cut Ambition's Cost from this deck.
And here's another one. 20% are cutting Painful Truths. Again, a thing that lets you draw cards. I'm just like, what? No, those are really good. Don't cut these. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, people are even cutting Magus of the Wheel, which that's not the most reliable card. But even then, like, that's a very good way. If you're the aggro deck and you're going to be using those seven cards better than your opponents, then Magus is even, I think, a more reliable option than Mentor of the Meek. So, yeah, some of the cards that people are taking out, especially Outpost Siege. Outpost Siege is such an all-star in so many different decks. I can't see why 38% of decks are taking Outpost Siege out.
Yeah, there are some cuts that I totally agree with here. The Impetus is the Bonder's Ornament. I don't think we've addressed, but like all of the Impetus cards and the Bonder's Ornaments have been removed from all of the precons. Not very sorry about that one. Humble Defector, that's kind of a weird one too. I am actually also seeing Crackling Doom is being removed from this precon too. 3-mana instant, deals 2 damage to each opponent, and then each opponent sacrifices a creature they control with the highest power. What? That's amazing. That's like a card that makes me want to play Mardu.
Right.
I love that spell. It's been cut from 45% of the decks that we're measuring on this precon feature so far. What's going on?
No,
it's making my voice do this.
That's a perfect wording, Joey. That's exactly how I always feel about Crackling Doom. I always feel like, man, I wish I had a Mardu deck to run that.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we're kind of a little confused, I guess, by the stuff that we're seeing here. So let's see if we can make any better recommendations. Are there cards in the precon that you guys do think should be cut instead of some of the stuff we're seeing, or cards that should be added instead of some of the stuff that we're seeing on this precon feature, measuring what people are doing? What are some other changes that you guys would prefer to make instead of what we're seeing here?
One card I would like to see here is a black sorcery Minions Murmurs, where you draw a card.
It's only a matter of time.
And lose a life for each creature you control.
It's like your signature spell day.
Well, it is a good card, but like this is the kind of deck where you're going to have a lot of bodies in play, and you are in colors that have access to life gain too. But like even if you don't have any life gain, just drawing 7 cards or something and losing 7 life, that better do something effective in your deck, or you need to maybe re-examine how you've built it. Like that's the kind of card that in this kind of deck is probably going to put you in a good position to maybe win. That's just so much fuel, so efficient. I think that would be a great card to add here.
Yeah, cool stuff. Anything else though?
I mean, I would like to see more ways to protect your battlefield. People are already putting Boros Charm in, which is great. That's a very, very good card to have. But keep in mind, and I know it's not a cheap card by any means, but this is a deck that really, really wants Teferi's Protection or just any other those types of effects. It's a very board dependent deck. It's all about a tribe that has to be on the battlefield to really do anything. So making sure you just keep your creatures on the battlefield, that's going to be a very, very important thing to keep in mind.
And you know, listen, you might have to sell some blood to get it to Teferi's Protection, but like you're making more, you know, just sell some of it and go get that to Teferi's Protection.
I mean, who would have thought that you can sell like 6 barrels of crude oil and you can get a Teferi's Protection.
There we go.
Guys, it takes so much work to make sure that these jokes are going to be like 2 weeks in the past. Anyway, another thing though, like in terms of protecting your board, I really like the idea of blink spells, stuff like Ghost Way or Eerie Interlude, because Jarena has that enters the battlefield ability. So you can protect your board. And maybe even if you would lose any tokens because they can't be blinked, Jarena is still going to resupply you with at least one more. So that's another thing that could be interesting. Or maybe you just want to put in an Ephemerate in the deck to just manually blink Jarena whenever you'd like as well. And then also, I think that there are plenty of other anthems that you could take advantage of. We talked about Mercadia's Downfall on a previous episode, a personal favorite of mine. Radiant Destiny also sounds kind of cool to give all of those tokens vigilance if they all fit that creature type. And also, Adaptive Automaton seems really great too, because you can turn it into a human and then it will pump up your other humans. And I actually also there's one other thing that I would be kind of curious. Do you guys like the Kindred spells, which I think were from the 2017 decks? Kindred Dominance and Kindred. I don't remember what the name of the red one is. It'll be showing on the screen, so I'm sure that people who are listening to this are just shouting the name at me. But the Kindred spells that can destroy all creatures other than the type that you choose, or one that will copy all of the stuff that you've got of a specific creature type to help attack your opponents. Are you guys a fan of those? Would you play those in this tribal deck too?
I completely forgot about those, but now that you say it, Kindred Boon actually fits into what I think is an important part of the deck too, is making sure that your creatures are indestructible. But any of those Kindred spells, I think, are pretty solid.
And there's also Harsh Mercy, which is an old sorcery for 2 and a white. Each player chooses a creature type and destroy all creatures that aren't of the type chosen this way, and they can't be regenerated. You just pick humans, and yes, your opponent's going to keep a couple creatures because they'll just pick whatever is most useful to them. Or once in a while, you'll, you know, be facing a tribal deck and they'll save their stuff too. But it's almost always going to generate 3 mana worth of creatures being killed, if not a whole ton of value.
Gotcha.
While never hurting you at all.
Yeah. And I think also there's plenty of stuff to cut from this list that we aren't seeing cut too much. The Cavalry Pegasus that gives your humans flying when they attack. I'm kind of like, is that great? I don't think that it's being cut very much, but Titan Hunter kind of stands out to me as being pretty expensive for a minimal ability. And then when I'm looking through the spells, I feel like there's not a lot of removal here as well, especially considering that people are removing the Crackling Doom.
Yeah.
I see a handful of the things in the deck list, the original one, like Terminate or Dire Tactics, but I feel like Mardu's really, really good at targeted removal. And so sprucing up that part of the deck list too could be a really good thing. To focus on. All right, we're going to move now from the humans to the mutants. We're looking at the Sultai Mutation deck helmed by Otrimi. Dana, what are we seeing here that people are adding to the Otrimi deck?
People are adding to the Otrimi deck things like Parcel Beast and Zagoff Crystal and Myth of Brokos. Basically, they're adding a bunch of cards that are actually from the main Ikoria set.
Yeah, that sort of, that scans.
Right, and it makes sense because this is like, ostensibly the whole set was supposed to synergize with Ikoria, but this is the deck that really synergizes with Ikoria. This feels like it's entirely splintered off from the Ikoria set, and so it makes sense that a lot of those cards are going to have a home here.
Yeah, I think basically our comments on this particular section is all the mutants from Ikoria, put them into this deck.
Yes.
If they aren't already in the list, there are a few that weren't, like Sea Dasher Octopus, for example. It's a very cheap mutation card. But kind of an awkward thing, just something I want to take your guys' temperature on for this is, I was looking through and I did a quick search and I think there are only like 20 total cards with mutate in Sultai colors just at all. Which does put this deck in kind of an awkward position, including all of them. You still only get like 20, and one of those is Otrimi. So like there's not a ton of mutation targets for this deck, which does put it into kind of a weird space, don't you think?
It does, but I like what they're doing. So if you look at the deck, some of the cards that people are adding are cards like Troll Ascetic, Thrun the Last Troll, and Solana Ledgewalker. Those are all kind of boggle type of cards. So they're using them, and most importantly, they're not humans, which means they're very, very good mutate targets. So they're kind of using it, the mutate spells, the mutate creatures, as auras and using them to buff up a hexproof creature. I like that. That's kind of a creative thing that people are doing, and it's actually kind of cool that they thought of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good lesson, too. The play pattern that I imagined for a deck like this is that you're going to load up one creature as having a bunch of mutations on it, because there are so many cards that say, whenever this mutates, do this. And if you stack a bunch of those, then you'll be able to get a bunch of beasts, or you'd be able to get a bunch of triggers off of that kind of deal. And it actually maybe is more the case that you want to find some tinier creatures that would be really, really excellent to, you know, do some stuff with. For example, a card that we're seeing added here, Cephalid Constable, 3-mana, 1/1 Cephalid Wizard. When it deals combat damage to a player, return up to that many target permanents that player controls to their owner's hands. Good grief. That sounds ridiculous if you're able to give it a bunch of power. That's something that Rafik of the Many players have been doing for so, so long now, to buff this up and then bounce a bunch of stuff. It does seem like the play pattern of the deck is going to be much more along the lines of finding a tiny creature and putting a mutation onto it, as opposed to maybe putting a bunch of mutations onto one, or maybe there's flexibility in it. It's just there's a strangeness to this deck that sort of feels maybe a little bit hampered by the number of mutations available. So you do have to thread that needle kind of carefully, I guess. So what about cards that are being cut from the pre-con? What do we think about this section?
So this one, I like what people are doing, and the cuts make a lot more sense and fit in the deck than the Mardu deck, for example. What people are cutting are stuff like Boneyard Mycodrax, which is a card with scavenge, and it has power and toughness equal to the number of other creature cards in your graveyard, which is fine, but if you're trying to kind of spread the love, I don't know if it's really doing what the rest of the deck wants to be doing. Or Mast Admirers is another card that it doesn't really make sense, doesn't contribute to the overall theme. So if you're doing kind of the Boggles type game plan, you're just trying to make big Sultai beasts, then neither of these cards are really doing a whole lot. Hero's Bane is a +1/+1 counters type of card. So the top cards that people are cutting, I get why they're cutting them out of the deck.
Yeah, this is a very divided precon because a lot of the cards were added to synergize with Zaxara the Exemplary also being cut from the deck, which cares a lot about X spells. So that puts the deck into a very, very strange place. Like the Hydras do kind of make sense because you can make a tiny Hydra and put a big mutant onto it if you want, or you can make a big Hydra and then give it a base power with the mutant and then all the plus one counters will still carry over. But even then, it is kind of an awkward position to be in. And I think a vast majority of the precon can kind of go if you want to be focusing more on the mutation and stuff. If you want to make room, there's a lot of stuff that synergizes with the other commanders that you can easily toss to make room for them.
Well, and there's a lot of cards, and we've seen this in all these decks. You know, the impetus cards are coming out of basically all of these decks. I don't know if the impetus cards are necessarily bad. I don't think they're great, but they're not terrible. No. But they don't do the thing that the deck wants to be doing. And these decks all want to do a real specific thing. And you, as the pilot, tend to want to see your deck do that specific thing. That's why you've built it. That's why you've, you know, gone into mutate or you've gone into cycling. You want the deck to kick off and do a bunch of those splashy things. So of course the first things you're going to cut out would be cards that don't do those things. And I think that's a lot of the victims in a lot of these decks of the cuts are just cards that, while they might be perfectly fine, they just aren't doing what you want the deck to be doing.
Yeah. There are some other things that I would want to see cut from the deck too, though. Like the Masked Admirers sort of stood out. I think also one that stands out to me is like Widwin, the Biting Gale, is a fairy wizard that shows up here with flying that can return itself to your hand by paying 2 mana and alive. And I'm just like, this is, I don't know, that's kind of lackluster. Yavimaya Dryad is a weird one to see here as well. There are other mana dorks that might be better. I just feel like there's a lot that could, you know, be desired here. But then also, I guess I wonder if there are other types of cards that you would add. We know that you'd probably want to stuff a bunch more mutation cards from the main set in here. Are there any other things that might synergize with that strategy that you guys can think to add to the precon list that would help spruce up that strategy after they've added in all of those mutants?
I do think Matt made a really great point talking about the troll aesthetic and Thrun having hexproof on whatever giant beast you put into play is so, so useful, let alone regenerate, which isn't, you know, necessarily terrible either. I think I'd be very tempted to look for a few more kind of keyword soup cards, particularly non-human ones, that could give my mutate creature multiple abilities to guarantee I poke through, even like Vampire Nighthawk kind of cards. That's a, you know, great example of a card that's efficient, easy to cast, and then being able to mutate onto something and give it flying and death touch and lifelink. Like that kind of card, I feel like I would want to be looking to add more of those kind of things to this deck.
I think the biggest thing that I would be looking to add to this deck is some sort of draw engines. There isn't really any in the precon. There's 38 creatures, which is a huge amount. But when you look at all the kind of draw spells and everything, it really leans hard into depending on Lifecrafter's Bestiary, which is in the precon, and that's a very good card for this type of deck, especially if you're using creatures as kind of an aura type of spell. But there's not a whole lot else to really keep you drawing cards. I know it's expensive, but you know, your Rhystic Studies and those types of cards, those are going to be good cards to help keep, you know, more creatures in your hand so you can keep casting everything. The Great Henge would be insane here. So anything, just make sure that it's rewarding you. It's getting cards in your hand, because I could see this deck really struggling to, maybe it draws the wrong half of the deck, or you just run out of gas and then you're kind of sitting there and just trying to do anything.
So I've got two kind of weird observations here, I guess. Like, one of the things that jumps out to me that mutants might be good for, sort of like Matt, you were talking about, you know, getting those smaller creatures, the ledge walkers or the Cephalid Constables and stuff like that. I'm wondering if what this might end up being, like when you look for tiny creatures that would have a big payoff if they hit someone, if they had more power. I mean, Infect inevitably jumps out to me here. So stuff like Phyrexian Crusader, Blight Mamba, Plague Stinger, all seem pretty good. So I'm wondering if maybe leaning into Infect is actually a good direction to make this get a bit more punch. That's a controversial thing for some players. They don't like Infect in Commander so much, but that could be powerful. So instead of just that observation, like, that's a thing that could happen, is basically what I want people to be prepared for. But the other thing I kind of want to throw out here, I haven't fully developed this idea, but I just want to toss it into the ether. Would Brokos be a better mutate deck if that's the strategy that you're going for, where you're not piling up a whole bunch of stuff on at once, but Like, if there are only 19 other mutate cards that you can even get back from the graveyard with Otrimi's ability, would it be better to just let, if your mutated creature dies and Brokos goes to the graveyard and then you can cast it again, avoiding command tax and still getting a 6-6 body, would that be better? I'm not sure. I just kind of wanted to toss it out there and make you guys do the mental work for me on that front. it just sort of popped into my head and I kind of wanted to vocalize it.
Always making us do the heavy lifting, Joseph. I see how it is.
I do think it's definitely a situation where you could swap those two out and not necessarily feel like you have to change really anything in your deck at all.
Yeah.
So it's probably a fairly easy thing to test out.
It probably comes down to what feels best and what you like to lean into
between
Otrimi and Brokos. Because I could see you wanting to have Brokos in the graveyard more reliably, but Otrimi's ability is also very powerful because that's a pretty decent engine, good card advantage built in anyway. So depends on what you value more out of your commander between Otrimi and Brokos and just kind of flip a coin almost.
Yeah, I really like that they are tying the precons to the set's main themes. I just wish that this one had gotten a lot more support from that because only 20 total Sultain Mutants, it feels like you know, needs maybe a little bit more. This deck probably requires the most tuning and pruning to make sure that you find the strategy that you want with the mutation ability. And that just leaves one more precon for us, the Obzon Keyword Counters deck helmed by Cathryl. Guys, what are we seeing here that is being added to the precon?
So they're obviously loading up on some way to get those graveyard shenanigans going for Cathryl. Stuff like Buried Alive is the most added card to the deck just because it gets three creature cards from your graveyard into your battlefield. You can put stuff like Oketra the True. Oh, they're also adding that card to the deck. That's a good way to get Double Strike and Indestructible to your team. Leyline Prowler also has Death Touch and Lifelink, and also is just a decent little mana dork. Also, Basara Tower Archer. That's an interesting one that people are adding at about a third of the decks. It's just a Hexproof and Reach creature for two mana. It makes a lot of sense. I know I've been saying that a lot, apparently. But people have done a very good job at kind of figuring out where these decks are trying to go. It's not super scattered anymore like we've seen with precons in years past. But people are focusing down really well on what kind of cards they want to look into. Questing Beast is another card that's added in almost 30% of decks, and that's just keyword soup along with, you know, 80 lines of card text. So yeah. I like what people are doing here. They're fitting multiple keywords onto single creatures as a way to really fuel up that graveyard for Cathryl's ability.
Yeah, this is easily my favorite of the pages that we've looked through. You're getting a bunch of stuff, a bunch of creatures with great keywords, a really diverse range of them, but also a bunch of stuff that puts stuff into the graveyard. So of course I like it, right? Underrealm Lich is an interesting way to, you know, fill the graveyard up. Fauna Shaman can toss away the cards you don't like. There's a lot of stuff that I really enjoy here. Even Perpetual Timepiece, a lovely pet card of mine that can mill you incidentally. That's showing up here on this page too. This makes me really, really happy. But then I have to ask if there are any cards that are being added here that maybe don't make you guys as happy, or do you like the page as much as I do? What do you think?
You know, I think most of this stuff makes sense to me. Of the ones we looked at, I feel like this is probably the most logical set of cards being added. There's very few things I would have to complain about here. Do you guys feel the same way, or is that just me?
I really do, and this is where I want to stop, actually, because I was scrolling down the page a little bit more, and I saw another card that I really like for this deck. Skullbriar, the Walking Grave. This was, like, the absolute winner of the set in terms of keyword counters, because it can keep all those counters even if it's in the graveyard. So it's a 2-mana 1-1 that whenever it deals damage to a player, you get a +1 counter on it, but the counters remain on it even if it moves to a zone other than the hand or library. So that's just phenomenal, because if you put keyword counters onto it with Cathryl, and then it winds up in the graveyard, and then you replay Cathryl, you'll be able to get all of those counters because Skullbriar has all of those abilities from the graveyard. Like, this is really great. I'm glad to see that one's being added. The only reason that it's not being added to more is probably because it's like a $7 card now. Like, oh, that one's a great, great addition for this deck. I really like the cards that we're seeing here.
Yeah, the only one that I don't really jive with super well is Carnage Tyrant. It's just a 6-mana big beater. Yes, it has two keywords on there, but for as expensive as a card of a card it is, I just don't know if that's as good. I think you can get the CMC lower and then have those keywords on a different creature that isn't 6 CMC, and the can't be countered clause doesn't carry over. Cathryl doesn't grant that. So I think Carnage Tyrant is probably one of the cards that people are adding that you could probably do better. But people are playing Final Parting, and that's one of my favorite cards the past couple years. Oh, it's so good.
Cool. So then that moves us to the cards to cut from the deck. A lot of the same stuff that we've seen before, but then also a smattering of, Matt, just like you mentioned, really expensive creatures in the deck. Stuff like Calumny's Captain. Void Beckoner is being removed, which actually really surprises me that this one's being cut from 54% of them that we're seeing so far, because this is a creature with Death Touch that has a cycling ability that you can then just immediately put into the graveyard. So that one kind of surprises me. But basically, a lot of the big creatures are what we're seeing here. Do you guys like the cards that are being cut, or are there maybe ones that you would want to keep? What you thinking?
I mean, I'm genuinely shocked that Soul Flare was even in the deck in the first place. It's so like, I guess I'm not, because it kind of on first glance reads like the kind of card that does what this deck does, where it has a bunch of abilities technically, but they only exist really when this creature's in play and it's going to take cards away if you use a delve ability that your commander wants to use. I just feel like there's so many contradictory things in that card that I absolutely get why everyone looks at it and goes, I don't even want to deal with this in this deck.
Yeah. Yep. That I agree 100%. Soul Flayer, I understand why it was in the deck, but yeah. I agree that it should be taken out as soon as you open the package.
But when we talk about some of the stuff, though, that like maybe should also be cut, like there are some cards in this deck list that I'm surprised aren't being, you know, cut for most of them, like that Netherborn Altar. I think that one absolutely needs to go. That one needs to take that out of that deck. I don't like that card. Any other cards that you guys see from the original precon list that you're kind of like, wait, why is this one sticking around? We should toss this one to make room for better stuff.
I'll mention this because it's kind of become meme status, at least among us. Deadbridge Chant.
Oh,
Deadbridge
yeah.
Okay, Chant
yeah.
never works. I know what you think it's going to work this time, because I've thought it's going to work this time. And I've thought that 20 different times in 15 different decks over the course of the last 5 years. It just never works. So it from this deck before you become me, who has four of them in their house and a binder somewhere because you keep thinking it's going to work. It's not going to work. So that's one I would definitely cut that's not being cut enough.
So I'll take that a step further too than Dana. Any of the reanimation type of package cards like Ever After, people seem to be keeping around a decent amount. I'm not a big fan of that. I think there are much, much better reanimation spells. You can just go big with Joey's favorite card of Rise of the Dark Realms. Just pay a few extra mana and get all the creatures instead of just two. That seems like a good trade-off. We talked about Selective Adaptation and how there's quite a few hoops to jump through. Not a big fan of that one either. So I think there's just some marginal cards that you can kind of just tinker with a little bit and improve to. There's nothing to me as egregious as Deadbridge Chant is to Dana, but there are some little cards, just some fine tuning you can do like Ever After that just... Yeah. It's not terribly efficient, and you can just do much, much better.
Yeah. Here's a possible replacement for this. So there are some cards that I wish would show up more, and this is some cards that I really think can boost up Cathrall. If you don't like Deadbridge Chant very much, maybe you will like Doom Whisperer, which can help you fill up your graveyard and is a really great body that provides you with the flying and the trample. Like, it's got keywords. It's a great beater. I think that slots right into the deck. That's a card that isn't showing up on these pages that I really think ought to. And then here's one that totally shocks me. Concerted Effort is only being added in so far at the rate of 6% from the precon upgrades. Concerted Effort, it's basically an Audric enchantment version that spreads around the keywords that you give out. Like, I can't believe that this one's showing up so low. That one totally needs to go into the deck list. I really enjoy a lot of the upgrades that we're seeing so far, but there are a few more that you can make that will push this over the ledge too. I like most of this page, but man, Concerted Effort, get that into this Cathrall deck. You're going to be so happy with it.
This deck is very much a kind of season to taste kind of thing, if you're thinking in terms of cooking, where like you add a pinch of salt and need to taste it to see if it's where you want it at. There's so many things you want to be doing here, whether it's like putting your own cards in the graveyard or maybe having the ability to reanimate some of those cards or finding the correct mix of keywords so you're not duplicating too much. And I think the only way to really do that is to just get a lot of reps in with this deck. So I think people who build this are going to make it and then have to make a lot of changes as they go, because there's really no way to eyeball that without just playing the deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, timing when you play the commander is going to be interesting, because you need stuff in the graveyard. Are you trying to make it a Voltron to make Cathrall as big as possible, give him all the words, or do you want to have a big board that Cathrall will help feed? There is definitely season to taste is a great way to describe it. So there is a lot of flexibility that you can do, and you also need to determine which of the keywords matters most to you to get into the graveyard first. Do you need the hexproof in indestructible, or do you have too much of that going on? We saw, Matt, you had mentioned a card that has reach that is pretty rare among a lot of the cards that we're seeing, and that can give another thing to Cathrall, another plus one counter, and that can be pretty valuable. You know, how much double strike do you have? Because, I mean, double strike is going to make all those plus one counters feel a whole lot better too. So look out for the double strike cards. There's a lot of flexibility that you can do with that. And I mean, Joey just likes a big graveyard. Don't know what else to tell you. All right.
That's not breaking news, Joey.
it really isn't. Any other final thoughts that you guys have about these precons and the cards that we're seeing upgraded, removed, added? Any other final thoughts that you have about this feature that you'd want to throw out before we call this episode to a close?
I think it's safe to say that regardless of commander and which, you know, head legend for the decks, looking through the precon upgrades, there's probably four or five cards that I never would have thought of on my own. I really like that people are fighting some of these really cool synergies, like how Kalamax can, you know, accidentally go infinite. I think that's cool when commanders, you know, you have to do a little bit of digging. And I know some people immediately think of it, but to the greater public, when they're like, I didn't even think of that. Like, that's a really cool thing to see that all of these commanders, I mean, like I said, using mutate creatures as kind of an aura on a boggle type creature, that is super cool. I love that synergy. So
yeah,
everything, you know, there's at least one or two things with each of these decks that people are doing that it makes me much, much more of a fan of these decks than I was a couple of weeks ago.
That's good to hear. Yeah.
I kind of had the same feeling, Matt. Like I liked these commanders much more talking about upgrading them than maybe I did looking at them in the abstract when we were reviewing them. I don't know why that is, but they're much more interesting in looking at this way than they were just kind of doing it cold.
Sure.
Well, and Matt, that's what you just mentioned there is one of my favorite things about EDH Rec is that it helps you find really great ideas that other folks have had. And that's like you said, there are so many of these synergies that we might not have been able to come up with on our own. So it's really great to see, I don't know, it's almost a little bit of teamwork, basically. And actually, in the comments below, listeners, we would totally love it if you would provide any other ideas that you have to upgrade these decks to, any other cards that you think should be showing up on their pages to help your fellow brewers out, because that's really what EDH Rec is all about. And on that note, I think we ought to call this episode to a close. Thank you guys so much for joining me. And if our listeners would like to get in touch with you, where can they find you all? Matt?
So you find me on the Twitters and also the Twitch at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55.
And Dana.
You can find me on the Twitterbirds at Dana Roach, and you can hear me a couple times a week on my other podcast, CMDR Central.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter, and you can find the cast at EDH RecCast on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have a question, a keen insight to EDH Rec's data, or maybe a challenge to stats pick that you think we ought to know about, you can contact us at edhreccast@gmail.com. Our thanks again to Josh LaQuai and the whole team at the Command Zone for handling the post-production work on the podcast, and of course, our thanks to our sponsors, TCG Player and Card Kingdom. They're seriously great, and you can find them using the price info links on EDH Rec or by visiting cardkingdom.com/EDH Rec to help show your support for the show. We'll be back at you next week with more data and insights. But until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.